From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is cracking, good people? Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host for the next hour, Al Martin. Boy, oh boy, do we have a show in store for you. The U.S. of A. Man, they crushed a lot of hearts in those final 30 seconds, tying Portugal a chance to move on to the round of 16. They come up just a bit short. We will be chatting with the MSU men's and women's soccer reporter and Lance United soccer reporter for Impact Sports, Brooke Lambeer. He'll be talking with us in just a sec. We'll also talk with Mateen Cleese about the NBA draft. And we'll talk a little Tigers as well. All of that and so much more, but as custom here on Current Sports, here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
I'm Matthew Ludke, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Monday, June 23rd. Michigan State has landed another commitment for its 2015 football class, and Macedonia Nordonia defensive lineman Justice Alexander, according to Scout.com. Alexander, who recently camped at MSU and earned an offer, is the third player to verbally commit to the Spartans in the last 8 days. Rivals rates Alexander as a two-star prospect, but his recruitment has picked up of late. He's also received offers from Tennessee and Pittsburgh. In other Spartan news, Jeremy Langford is one of 14 Heisman Trophy candidates named in a recent list compiled by NFL.com's Mike Huguenin. Langford is one of three Big Ten backs on the list, along with Amir Abdullah of Nebraska and Wisconsin's Melvin Gordon, both of whom rushed for more than 1,600 yards last year. Ohio State quarterback Braxton Miller also made the cut. The number two player on the list, just behind returning Heisman winner Jameis Winston, is Marcus Mariota, the Oregon star, who Michigan State will see in its second game of the season. Brianna Mobley, the all-star girls basketball starter from Waverly High School, committed to play basketball for NCAA Division I Western Michigan University. The University of Toledo also offered Mobley a scholarship. Mobley's best friend, Waverly grad Brittany Tyson, also attends Western. The U.S. men's soccer team was less than a minute away from punching a ticket to the World Cup's knockout round when Cristiano Ronaldo found Sylvester Varela for a gut-punching, game-tying goal in the closing seconds. The U.S., which rallied from an early deficit with two second-half goals, settled for a 2-2 draw and missed a chance to take it easy versus Germany on Thursday. With Group G still wide open, the Americans will need to win or tie versus the Germans to advance past the group stage. In local soccer action, the Lansing United capitalized on Tim Kreutz's first-half goal for a 1-1 draw with the Indiana Fire. Indiana's Thomas Schmidt opened the scoring 17 minutes in, but the United tied up just before the halftime whistle. Lansing United host FC Buffalo in their next match this Sunday at 2 p.m. And the Detroit Tigers may be back on track after sweeping the Cleveland Indians. It was a return to form for Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer, who each pitched well in the weekend series, and slugger Miguel Cabrera drove in the winning run Saturday night and followed it up with three RBIs on Sunday. The Tigers will look to keep their four-game winning streak going as they head to Texas for a three-game tilt with the Rangers. One of the biggest stars in women's golf captured the biggest trophy this weekend. Michelle Wee knocked in par to outlast the world's number one golfer, Stacey Lewis. It is the star's first major. In men's golf, Kevin Streelman captured the Travelers Championship by hitting a birdie on the 18th hole to garner his first league throughout the entire weekend. It also crowned him champion. In his seven straight birdies, Streelman didn't miss any putts over the last 10 holes on Saturday. Streelman also shot the same back nine score in 2008 when he competed at the TPC River Highlands. And finally, the famous Wimbledon Grand Slam begins today. 18th-ranked Sloane Stephens has already taken an early exit, being upset in the first round. Venus Williams is struggling to move past the first round in the third set, even at 1-all. On the men's side, Novak Djokovic just began his first match against unranked Andrei Golubev. We'll keep you updated throughout the show. And that wraps up the Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Monday, June 23rd. Phone lines are open, and we will send you back to Al.
All right, thanks a lot, Matt. So much happening over the weekend. Again, Wimbledon is going on right now, and as Matt just alluded to, Djokovic is taking on Golubev, and right now Djokovic has a 2-set lead, 6-0 in the first set, 6-1 in the second set, and they have just started the third set. We'll keep you updated on that one as our show carries on throughout this entire hour. Man, oh man, what a weekend. What a Sunday, though, more specifically, when you talk about the World Cup. It was a great game, the U.S. giving up an early goal, a lazy goal on defense as Portugal took that 1-0 lead. And then you just kind of saw him claw back. You know, I lost my voice. I felt like, you know, yelling at my flat screen the entire hour and a half that game took place. You know, and, you know, when I saw that final goal, it was about, 20, 30 seconds left. Cristiano Ronaldo and the greatness that he's just been playing with throughout his entire career. He put that on display. He was not great throughout that entire game, but that last 20 seconds shows you why he is one of the best in the game, with an unbelievable, you know, feed to his teammate for that just ridiculous header that crushed all of our hearts here in the U.S. of A. I immediately got up, started yelling at my TV. My dog joined in on the yelling at the TV, and I had to calm myself down and sat back on my couch. And you know what? During that moment, when, you know, reality had set in that the U.S. of A had given up that late goal, I sat down on my couch and just put the TV on mute a second and just kind of thought about what had just taken place. A 2-2 tie against Portugal. And I really got to thinking. It really angered me. And again, this is coming off a lot of saltiness. You know, this rant is very, very salty due to the fact that, hey, I bleed red, white, and blue. All of us do. We live right here in the beautiful land of the free, the United States of America. So we were all rooting for the U.S. yesterday. And if they would have won, of course, they would have advanced and went on to the round of 16. So I sat back and thought about that 2-2 tie. And it really, really got under my skin. You know, and now I want to put this out there because I am by no means a diehard soccer enthusiast. I love the World Cup when it comes around each and every 4 years. And, you know, I've really just flocked to my TV. And it's really amazing seeing what's happening in the world of soccer when it comes to the United States. This team has certainly been turning a lot of heads and certainly turned mine, especially their performance when they were up yesterday. But sitting back, just thinking about that 2-2 tie. I hate the word tie. And I want to bring in, you know, later on the show, we'll be talking with Brooks Lambeer, who is the MSU men's and women's soccer reporter and also a reporter for the Lansing United minor league soccer team right here in Lansing for Impact Sports. Because I want to ask Brooks, why in the world do ties exist in soccer? I just don't get it. You know, when you win and lose, there's value in winning and or losing. Because when you win, you learn how to win, hopefully. I have to put hopefully in there. You learn how to win. You learn, you know, your confidence builds. You learn how to duplicate certain things to become better in whatever sport or area of expertise that you're competing in. When you lose, you learn how to lose, hopefully. Not everybody learns how to lose, but hopefully you learn how to lose. It kind of fuels you to get better in whatever area of expertise, sporting-wise, that goes. And it motivates you. It serves as a motivator for you to become better. But when you tie, what do you take away from a tie? I mean, what, that both of you are good? No, you play. Like, going back to, you know, who was that? Herm Edwards, who went on his famous rant. You play to win the game. You play to win the game. I don't get it, folks. I just don't get why there are ties in the world of soccer. If to eliminate the ties, why don't you know, because you have four teams in each group. Why don't you have, you know, two games with those four teams, of course, and those two teams that win move on to the round of 16? Why do we have to go through the goal, you know, the goal differentials and, you know, adding up points and whatnot and so on and so forth? And why don't we have a winner? I just don't understand it. Again, this is a very, very salty rant here because I don't understand why ties exist in soccer. And I, of course, live here in the United States of America and was pretty upset after that 2-2 tie last night. I just don't understand it. Oh, we'll take your calls throughout this entire hour on the World Cup fever. It's been a thrilling first two games for the U.S. You got to admit that. I mean, you're playing such a talented team against one of the world's best players in Cristiano Ronaldo, and you almost beat him. You almost beat him, USA. You almost had it. Just let it slip right through your hands. And you look at game one against Ghana, how they came out and scored, you know, the sixth fastest goal in World Cup history, the sixth fastest goal, and they go on to beat Ghana. You know, and it just amazes me how soccer is really taking off here. But again, I'm no soccer enthusiast. I'm no, by no way, shape, or form a diehard soccer fan. But anybody watching what took place last night between the U.S. of A. and Portugal, you got to feel a bit heartbroken if you're rooting for the red, white, and blue. Man, oh man, was it entertaining, though. No. So now there are a plethora of scenarios that could go down that could propel the U.S. into the round of 16. We'll break all of that down and so much more. Again, Brooks Lambeer, who is the MSU men's and women's soccer reporter and reporter for Lansing United for Impact Sports. He'll be joining me later on in the hour to talk all things World Cup. And also we'll talk a little Lansing United as well, as they had a game over the weekend. And how about Carmelo Anthony? This is something we didn't highlight in our Quick Hit headliners. Carmelo Anthony officially opted out of the final year of his contract with the New York Knicks. And, you know, it became official this morning. And he will test free agency this summer. That's what his agent, Leon Rose, says. Now, this is no surprise here. I really don't know. When I looked at my phone yesterday and saw that update from ESPN Score Center, I kind of chuckled and said, it's like telling me the sun is going to come up tomorrow. You know, it's like, oh, duh. Duh, we all knew that Carmelo was going to opt out of his contract. I mean, there's no reason why why would you want to stay with the Knicks, or, you know, at least explore your options. Why would you want to come out and declare that you're going to stay with the Knicks so early, seeing as though how bad this franchise is and the struggles they've ensued these past, you know, numerous years. And, you know, even though, you know, Melo was gone on the record to say that he loves being a Knick, he loves the city, he loves the fans, right now, Carmelo Anthony is in the stage of his career where he wants to win a ring. Bottom line, simple as that. Now, he can sign a maximum contract worth $129 million over 5 years with the Knicks, and he can sign a maximum deal worth $96 million over 4 years with another team. So the moolah is going to be there. And Carmelo has also come on the record to say this as well. Phil Jackson has had some interesting comments when it comes to Carmelo Anthony's wallet. And Phil has come out on numerous occasions and said that Carmelo should possibly take a pay cut so that they can free up some cap room to bring over some new players for the Knicks to be a championship contending team. But why, if you're Carmelo Anthony, just put yourself in his shoes. You're Carmelo Anthony. You play for the New York Knicks. You haven't sniffed a championship in I don't know how long. But if you're Carmelo Anthony, looking at this whole thing, why would you take that risk of being paid less money on the possibility of the Knicks bringing over the personnel to help you compete for a championship? Nothing's guaranteed. So it's just an interesting fiasco that's going on right now. In just a moment, we'll be talking with, now I can pretty much call him a friend of Current Sports. And Al Mateen has been on the show many, many times, former MSU hoop great, and of course, basketball analyst for both the NBA and college basketball on Sirius XM Radio, CBS, and for Fox Sports Detroit as an analyst for the Detroit Pistons. Mateen Cleaves will be joining me in just a sec to talk about Carmelo and free agency, talk about what the Pistons need in this upcoming draft, and so much more. He also has the second annual One Goal, One Passion basketball camp taking place. It's actually tipped off this month over the weekend, and it will be coming to Lansing at the end of this month. And we'll talk about it in just a sec with my team. He's always got his hand in the cookie jar when it comes to numerous philanthropic endeavors from this area and beyond. So my team will chat about that. And also, we'll talk about the Tigers. As you just heard in the Quick Hit Headliners, how about them? You know, it's just, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like one of those things you sit back and just kind of reminisce a little bit and say, wow, this is kind of weird. It's weird for me because, you know, if you look at this whole thing, they're back on track seemingly. It's with a 5-game win streak now. And they do it against the team that they lost to beginning the 9-20 stretch. Yes, they do it too. They get back on track against the same team that started the whole losing catastrophe. It's pretty interesting stuff. All right, so we'll talk about the Tigers. Also, pick a Monday. We'll be right around the corner. And I have to remind all of you that, hey, Current Sports TV tapes this Wednesday. And another MSU hoop great, Charlie Bell. Yes, MSU hoop great Charlie Bell will be joining me. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by going to WKAR.org and signing up online for free. Again, that's Charlie Bell. He had one great career here at MSU. Went on to have a very, very solid NBA career as well. Charlie, such a great guy. I look forward to sitting down and chatting with him. Again, just simply go to WKAR.org and see about, you know, and sign up online for free, and you'll get to hear from Charlie Bell. So that'd be great stuff. Looking forward to sitting down with Charlie. Charlie's, he's a great player. He was a great player and such a even better guy off the court. So, and a quick update on the World Cup right now. Of course, two teams that, this match really doesn't matter because neither one of these teams are advancing. But Spain and Australia are playing right now. Spain is taking a 1-0 lead. All right, well, we'll open up our phone lines, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We will take your calls on anything that's on your noggin. Did you happen to catch that World Cup game last night? Oh, man, it just really got under my skin, folks. Call in right now. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. When we come back, we have so much more to chat about. Brooks Lambeer will join me. Also, we'll get Mateen Cleaves on to talk about the draft. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a flash. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. You know what, Alex? I think every Monday, this is between me and you, buddy. Every Monday, because we have this Martis Monday thing going on. If you don't know what Martis Monday is, folks, each and every Monday here on Current Sports, we play a particular artist each and every Monday, and we call it Martis Monday because that artist, his or her name has to start with the letter M. I can pretty much guess who this is today. Mary J. Blige, right? We're rocking a Mary J. Blige all day today. I want to play a guessing game because every single Monday, between me and you, we're going to start the show, and I have to guess who this artist is. If you play an off-the-wall artist, I mean, this is pretty obvious with Mary J., but we're going to have some fun with this. Folks, if you got any suggestions, which artist you want to hear on Current Sports each and every Monday, again, an artist has to start with the letter M. Today's is Mary J. Blige. Nice stuff, Alex. Mary J. is great.
Yeah, she's got some style, but we're not just doing the typical R&B. I mean, we've got Michael Jackson.
Right,
we'll
had MJ.
Go Maroon 5. We'll do some Mansions on the Moon. We'll play anything hip.
I don't know who Mansions
60s,
on the
70s,
Moon is.
90s. That's the point.
Mansions on the Moon? I have
all
no idea.
All kinds of new music here.
Nice. I dig it. All right, well, let's talk some soccer right now. Today, we bring in Brooks Lambeer. I'm officially adopting him as our current sports soccer expert here at WKAR. He is the MSU men's and women's soccer reporter and Lansing United reporter for Impact Sports. Brooks, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Good, man. How's it going?
I'm doing okay. I was about to say doing very well, my whole cliche. I'm doing ecstatic, but I'm not today because, you know, yesterday, looking at that USA and Portugal game, I mean, it took you on a roller coaster ride of emotions. I mean, I was low as the game started, you know, looking at that quick goal that Portugal was able to put together, a really lazy defensive let up by the US of A. And then, you know, looking at what took place, I mean, the US responded very well. They got up to a 2-1 lead, and then the great Cristiano Ronaldo had a beautiful, I mean, it was a thing of beauty. That pass was a thing of beauty, leading to the header that tied things. US does not advance to the round of 16. First of all, how crushing was that for you watching that whole thing yesterday?
I don't know if it was really crushing. Mm-hmm. I think with, like I said before, if we need to win or tie, and I think right now we're in a good place in U.S. soccer. You know, we are tied with Germany. We have to go in to play Germany, but we need stuff to happen in the Portugal-Ghana game. So we need, you know, we probably want to tie a Portugal win just because Portugal, the goal differential they have is -4. Mm. But, you know, as far as the game, it wasn't crushing. You know, there's a lot of positives to take away. So there's a lot to be said for that game.
There is a lot to be said. And, you know, just to kind of break down the scenarios, and Brooks, stop me at any point if I'm wrong on any of these. Now, scenario one, the U.S. needs to either win or draw against Germany to advance. Is that right?
Yes.
Scenario two. If the U.S. loses and there is a draw in the Portugal-Ghana game, the U.S. will advance.
Yes.
Scenario three, if the U.S. loses and wins a tiebreaker against the Portugal-Ghana winner. That's number three, right?
Yes.
And for posterity, the first two tiebreakers are goal differential and goals for.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so this is pretty interesting. So there's a lot of different things that could happen right now. What's pretty interesting is that the U.S. and Germany game will be going on at the same time as the Portugal and Ghana game. Am I right?
Yes.
So that kind of that I like that, because that doesn't allow either one of these teams to go on with preconceived notions as to how they want to play this whole thing, right? I love that, because it really, you don't see a dwindled down product, if you will, in either of those games. Now, I'm sure, you know, I guess, you know, it'd be kind of funny. The coaches probably may have to have up Twitter or something to kind of try to keep track on what's going on in that other game. But still,
yeah,
it's going to be interesting. Now, did it feel yesterday more like a loss? Seeing what happened in that last 20 seconds for you, Brooks?
No, it didn't, because I felt like they came out and look at how the U.S. has played in the other World Cups. I think as an American, you have to like how the U.S. played yesterday. Being down 1-0, you know, it's just like any sport. You want to set the tempo. You want to set it. You want to get out in front. They weren't out in front. They let out a sloppy goal. They came back, tied it 1-1, took the lead. And then, you know, that's soccer. Like, you can come back in the last 30 seconds off a beautiful cross from Ronaldo, from CR7, boom, right on the head of his forward, and right in. You know, I mean, it wasn't really a loss to me, but it wasn't a win. So.
Right, exactly. Very well put. Now, looking at the entire game, you know, for you, Brooks, what are your takeaways from that game? Were you impressed or depleted by anything that the U.S. did or did not do throughout that game against Portugal?
You know, I was impressed with the way we could possess the ball. Now, in the Ghana game, we were playing a little differently. You have to understand that when you play each game and against different teams, you're going to play different formations. Your tactics are going to be different. You know, there may be a team where you're good at possessing the ball against, where maybe you're going to have to kind of play more direct from the back to the top. So I felt like, you know, and a lot of the other analysts, soccer analysts out there, felt like this is a game where they thought we could win. And we could play well, and we did. We showed that we can knock the ball around, and we can put pressure on Portugal, and even, you know, we can come down from a 1-0, being down 1-0 early in the game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I felt like they showed a lot yesterday, and they showed a lot of passion, and they showed all the hard work they've been working on for the last 4 years. So,
how much do you think Jozy Altidore's absence was felt in that game?
Well, he's going to be missed in every game, because he's a different striker from Chris Wondolowski and Aaron Johansson. Chris, let's compare Jozy Altidore, body of like LeBron James, huge, mm-hmm, in the post. Like, you know, if you're going to be a 3 or 2, you can't really, he's going to post you up. You can't do much.
Right.
So he's that guy at the top where if you play it from the back to the front, he can hold the ball up top and wait for other guys to make runs and to work off Josie Altidore. With a more of a Chris Wondolowski and Aaron Johansson, you're going to play a lot of through balls. They're not as great as holding the ball at the top when it's played in from the back. So that's what you're kind of – it's different. He Josie Altidore, physicality and strength is what he gives you.
Right.
Wondolowski, Johansson, a little more speed, a little more tactics. So,
mm-hmm. Looking at the way that one ended, because, I mean, I was on cloud nine when I saw that the U.S. had taken the lead. I'm sitting there like, all right, you know, this game's about to end. USA is about to move on to that round of 16. And then you see, you know, the heartbreaker, if you will, when that moment ensued and the game just ends suddenly. I mean, you saw the local and numerous fans. ESPN did a great job of, you know, taking you to Chicago and New York, Afghanistan, yeah. Getting all of the fan reaction to that goal. And, you know, you heard from the players afterwards how, you know, it was a moment that, yes, they would have loved to capitalize on. And if they could have just definitely, you know, salvaged the end of the game and went on with that 2-1 victory, they would have definitely felt better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you heard the cliche answers afterwards after they were interviewed saying, okay, we got to stay focused. We're in this position here. We still got a shot at moving on. We're fine. But looking at how they lost that game. And eclipsing this to any sport, whether it be a buzzer beater in basketball or whether it be a last-second Hail Mary in the game of football, that's the equivalent of what happened yesterday evening. What can a loss like that do to a team mentally, especially on the World Cup stage, Brooks?
Well, it can do a lot of damage. I'm sure the guys are they're telling themselves we should have had it. You know, they're just kind of telling, you know, giving the media the basic answers, you know,
right.
You want to give them. But in the back of their minds, they're probably saying to themselves, we should have had it. We were 30 seconds away. But they've been playing this game their whole life. And they have been in games like that through their youth career, through their college careers, through their young professional careers, and into their, you know, current professional careers. It's just something that happens in the game of soccer. And it's like any professional athlete. It's something you just got to get out of your mind.
Right.
You know, that's what great athletes do. Great athletes get that out of the back of their mind and then just move on.
As my grandfather used to say, sometimes, son, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. Hey, folks, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Brooks Lambeer. He is the MSU men's and women's soccer reporter and Lansing United soccer reporter for Impact Sports. All right. Well, the U.S. will take on Germany this Thursday. What are your expectations in that game? What type of team is Germany, Brooks, for those that don't know?
Oh, Germany, big defense. Tallest guy, 6'6". So on
wow.
Free kicks and corner kicks and set pieces, you're going to have to defend. Jeff Cameron and Omar Gonzalez, if Klinsmann's going to let him play, they're going to have to watch who they mark. And talented team. They only have one forward on their team. They only brought one forward, but they have a lot of midfielders that can play in the forward position. So it's going to be a game where Germany is not like – it can be a Spain, but they're not going to be as possessive as a Spain where they're going to knock the ball around very fast, but they can move the ball. They can get up and down the field. They can defend. They're very hard to break down like in Italy. So, you know, is a win possible? Of course it's possible. It's not far to reach in soccer to win 1-0 or to hold on. Probably a tie is most likely, but how are the U.S. going to play? Are they going to sit back? Are they going to play a 4-4-2 and sit back? Are they going to play a 4-5-1 again without Altidore in there and, you know, play a little more defensive in the midfield? You know, I think they'll probably play a 4-5-1 since Josie's not in there. So if you're looking at that, hopefully, you know, they're not going to press too high. They'll probably, as I said, stay back more. But I'm looking at probably a tie here.
You're looking at a tie. So the Brooks Lambeer prediction here is a tie, and that's all they need to move on. And what do you think is going to happen in the Portugal and Ghana game? That it's going to be taking place simultaneously the same time as the U.S. and Germany game.
If you want to see goals, that's going to be a game.
That's the game you watch, huh?
Because Portugal is at -4 right now, and then USA is +1 in goal differential. So, you know, if they win, they want to put in as many goals in the back of that net. But Ghana doesn't have to put in as many just because they're only -1. So I think both teams, they have to win that game to move on. So they're going to be very offensive, and they're going to be pushing guys forward. And, you know, I think – I don't know who's going to win that game. I'm going to go I'm just maybe Portugal might win that one. Could be Ghana, but
right.
I mean, I'm like
either way.
I'm liking Portugal just because Cristiano Ronaldo wants to, you know, at least to try to advance. So
right.
But yeah, it's going to be quite a game.
It certainly is. Right now, quick update in the World Cup. Right now, Spain is taking on Australia. They have just gone up 2-0 over Aussie. So, all right, really quickly, Brooks, also, you're a reporter for Lansing United. Lansing United had a match over the weekend on the road, I believe, against the Indiana Fire, in which mm-hmm. they drew a 1-1 draw. What yep. were your takeaways from that? How is Lansing United looking right now?
You know, I think that's fine. They, like I said, they need to draw or win the rest of their games to stay in contention. You know, right now they're tied for second. Detroit City's in first. So I think coming away with the tie at Indiana, a very good Indiana team with a lot of great college players that go to Butler, Akron, University of Indiana. Very good, sound tactical team. When they came earlier in the year, we tied, and you know, they were very sound defensively. Great goalkeeper, 6'5", Eric Dick, who goes to Butler. Mm-hmm. You know, but I'm happy. MSU Tim Kreutz scored, so you know, I'm liking that. And you know, they need it's the same thing with the U.S. team, the mentality. They need to, down the stretch here, the last five games, they need to keep mentally tough and tie or win.
Brooks, you heard my rant. Before I let you go, you heard my rant at the beginning of the show, I'm sure. I sat back after that game, sat on my couch, muted my TV to take it all in right now. You know, 2-2 tie. And look at Lansing United. They tied with the Indiana Fire over the weekend, 1-1. Why in the world do ties exist in soccer? Because, brother, I don't get it. I hate it.
You know, I can't tell you exactly who came up with the tie or why. I think it makes the sport of soccer interesting and different. I think it gives you that aspect. You know, obviously in the next stages of the World Cup, there's no ties. It's one game
right,
elimination,
one game elimination,
so there's PKs or there's
looking forward
extra
to that.
Time.
Oh.
Yes, for sure. But you know, as far as ties, that's how the game of soccer works, man. It's different.
Do you like
but
ties?
It's beautiful.
I hate them. I feel like I just wasted an hour and a half last night.
Well, it depends where you are in your standings. That's for sure. You know, if you're at top of the table, you only need one point. You know, why not? But you know, if you're on the brink of winning a championship or advancing in the group stage or whatnot,
yeah.
You know, that's where the tie kind of sucks if you'd fall 2 points short instead of getting three. So,
gotcha. It's all, yeah, I guess it does go beyond that realm. Hey, Brooks, thanks so much for joining me today. Brooks Lambeer, I'm adopting his current sports and soccer expert here on the show, MSU men's and women's soccer reporter and Lansing United soccer reporter for Impact Sports. Well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the World Cup talk a little Tigers, and it's Monday. That means pick 'em Monday. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Chemistry was crazy from the get-go. Neither one of us knew why. We didn't build nothing overnight, 'cause a love like this takes some time. People swore it off as a phase.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, now joined by Alex Sharg and Matt Lutke. Well, Matt, you heard my rant at the beginning of the show, and pretty much everybody. I'm getting a bunch of tweets right now from numerous people, getting a few text messages here, who also hate ties. They don't get them. I don't understand it, because I felt as though, I sat back and I just thought to myself, why? Why, oh, why? I felt like, you know, if they start the game at a tie, 0-0, and they end up in a tie, I felt like I just wasted an hour and a half of my time for nothing. It upsets me. I don't know. What are your thoughts on ties, man?
I don't mind ties.
I hate them. Oh.
I don't mind them.
You like ties?
Especially in the group stage, you know, as far as the World Cup is concerned, I mean, I like it. It adds that other dimension, like Brooks kind of alluded to.
Oh, no.
Now we have, you know, the one point. That's making all the difference right now.
Oh, man.
You need to pick up points any way you can.
But you watch it. You're sitting there and you watch this thing. It's riveting television. It was a great game yesterday. And you watch it, and don't you want to feel some type of, you know, that there's a winner in this whole thing? There was no winner yesterday. We just sat there and now maybe the winner is Portugal.
We're all winners, Al. We're all winners because we got to watch that game. We got to watch that game.
It was a great
game. And then on Saturday, Germany and Ghana was fantastic, too, and that ended in a 2-2
tie. That ended
in
a tie, too. But you play to win the game. That is why you play. You don't play, I don't go out there and play a game of golf or a game of basketball or a game of goldfish with my grandma to end up in a tie.
Al, it's a long tournament. It's not like this is the final match and they said, you know what? We're gonna give both America and Portugal the World Cup. That's not happening.
Al,
it's not over. We're not out of the woods yet.
The other thing is that you might save a coach's job. If you've got 30 wins and you've got 10 ties and then you got maybe 10 losses opposed to 20 losses,
yeah,
a general manager might say, okay, well, those were close games. The tie was against maybe the best team in the country. And then you could say, well, I'll give them another contract. So there's some coaches out there that have had ties that still have their jobs because of ties, Al.
But, Alex,
so
to be honest with
keep
you.
Keep that in mind.
To be honest, I could care less about whether or not a coach keeps or loses his job. I'm just being honest with you. I could care. That is at the low priority of my care list, whether or not a coach keeps, unless it has to do with the coach of a Pistons team. But other than that, I mean, you sit there, they start the game off.
Hey, tell that to Tom.
0-0.
Tell that to Tom Anastas, Al. Tell that to Tom Anastas.
Yeah, every coach. I hope every coach listens. I don't care. But looking at, you know, they start the game 0-0. They start off in a tie. They end in a tie. It's like, why did I just waste my time?
I don't think you waste your time
I
at all.
I wasted my time. I could have been watching Sons of Anarchy. I could have been watching Sons of Anarchy on Netflix. I could have been out working out at the gym, you know, getting my health and fitness on. I could have been potty training my dog.
You still could have been doing all that while watching the game.
Oh.
And wouldn't you say that when you lose? Wouldn't you be more upset when you lose compared to when you tie?
No, I would be more upset.
Bad,
I feel as though tying is – I would be more upset if I tied. Because tying is like, you know, where it gives you no emotion, no feeling.
Well, you know who you should be talking to?
You know?
Everyone in Portugal.
Yeah.
They're absolutely ecstatic with the tie.
Right, that's
because they scraped out and got a point.
Right.
And they're still alive.
They're still alive.
If there's no ties, they could be done today.
That is true. But I'm just talking about overall soccer. Not just looking at last night's game, but soccer. Why do ties? Like, you know, a game against United, Atlanta United in the Indiana Fire. 1-1 draw. That's exciting.
Hey.
Oh, my God.
Pick up a point.
I just don't get it. I don't get it. Folks, call in 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527, Matt.
See, now I have more of a problem with, once we get into the knockout stage, games ending with penalty kicks.
You don't like penalty? I think
hate
that's great.
That. See, that's like if the NHL decided in the Stanley Cup playoffs to end games with a shootout. That's the dumbest. They do shootouts in the regular season.
So you would like to see a sudden
so
death
that,
overtime.
Just for the fans. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I like
keep
that better.
Playing. Run it
right.
back. Another 45-minute half.
That's more riveting TV, though, than a tie. Am I right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like apples and oranges, though.
No, Matt.
If absolutely.
You would like to see a penalty shootout more so than a 2-2 tie.
Well, I wouldn't like to do that in the group stage. I wouldn't like to see some team get knocked out because they lost in a penalty
shootout.
But be
shootout. Honest, what's more riveting TV? Wouldn't you be on the stage? Because you know somebody's going to win out of this whole thing.
Well, Al, the only thing in that regard is that the only reason they have a penalty shootout is because the game ends in a tie.
I do agree.
You're not going to have a penalty shootout if the game doesn't end in a tie.
Yes.
So you have to have the tie in the first place.
Yeah, but the tie moves on to a realm of the game where you have a winner and a loser.
Right, but let's say you're Portugal yesterday. You tie it up, 30 seconds left.
Right.
And then you lose in a shootout.
Still.
That's a worse outcome than having the tie and having both teams stay alive.
We still get a winner and a loser, though. Somebody still walks out as the victor.
Yeah, we're not done yet, though.
And here's the thing about a shootout, though.
We have a barbershop Wednesday on Monday.
Oh,
I love
man.
This.
Here's the thing about a shootout. At least each team gets one chance, regardless of who makes it first. You're talking about the NFL, first team wins. At least at college football, at least with soccer, at least with hockey, you get a chance regardless of what order you go.
It's equal opportunity.
It's equal. Right? And if anything, I'd be more upset about the NFL overtime than I would about college football or hockey or soccer.
Yeah. Well, you know, college football is interesting, though, because in college football, I mean, each team gets a possession in overtime at the 20, right? And they keep going back and forth. So that's kind of equal opportunity as well.
It's the same,
you know?
Yeah.
I'm glad the NFL sort of changed their approach to it, too, because they have a thing like that where each team gets a chance.
Well, if the first team scores a field goal.
Right, if they score a field goal, you get an opportunity. Now, if it's a touchdown, then, hey, it goes
Game's
out the window.
Own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, oh, boy, interesting. So what do you people think about this? Do you like ties? 517-355-9527. 95-27. Ties are something I wear around my neck like today. I just hate them. That's what a tie means to me, okay? Not in the game. All right, folks. Let's move on now. The Tigers. How about the Tigers, guys? The Detroit Tigers seem to be... I don't want to go crazy with this. Let me lower my tone here. I sounded
just
too
like,
excited.
Just like
with
your
that.
Panic meter from last week.
Right,
Is that lower?
Nine.
Too?
Oh, it's nine. It's nine.
It's
now.
Still a nine. They won four straight games. Yeah, they swept the Indians.
Yeah, I'm gonna leave up at a nine. I'm not. Straight still. That's at a nine still, man.
Okay.
But the Tigers, it was a great outcome for them over the weekend as they swept the Cleveland Indians. A return to form for JV. How about JV and Max, who each pitched well in the weekend series, and Miguel Cabrera drove in the winning run Saturday night and followed up with three RBIs on Sunday. As I said before, we got into the World Cup talk, man. This is kind of like. It's kind of eerie because this is the same team they played when they started the whole losing streak, you know, when they went 9-20. If you remember back in, I believe it was May, they played Cleveland and it was a bad outcome. And that started the whole 9-20 stretch. And now it kind of comes full circle for them as they sweep Cleveland. Maybe there's some, you know, higher semblance from the baseball guys with this whole thing. I don't
right.
know.
Right. I mean, let's just look at it as, and I hope the Tigers are too, it's just bookending a bad month.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Now they're over. They're through it. They get a sweep on the road. They get another two series on the road down in Texas.
Right.
Play the Rangers and the Astros. Two winnable series. I mean,
yeah.
The Rangers will be tough. The Astros, they should win, even though they're better this year. But if they can start to kind of get things rolling heading into the All-Star break, build a little momentum, I think they'll be fine. So, I thought they would be fine all last month, too, though.
Yeah, me is another story. Is that a nine now? So you do think this kind of propels him into kind of a winning streak?
It definitely can. It definitely can.
Okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
How about Joe Nathan striking out the side in one of the games? It seems like he's coming back to form now. That was the biggest concern, Al, of yours. In the last three games, the relief has been good.
Yeah, you know, I won't go too crazy over three games, though, but yeah, you're right. You're definitely right, Alex, on this. Because, you know, if you look at this whole thing, the Tigers' problems during their month from hell, if you will, were a conflux of really poor power production here from those fifth and sixth spots. You didn't really know what you want to get from the starting pitching, which was kind of rather odd for this Tigers team. And, yeah, the bullpen is still sort of suspect. To me, you know, even though they're looking good right now, they're looking solid. I wouldn't say good or great. They're looking solid right now, but still, you never know. I mean, we could be singing a different story as this week moves on here. But and how about JD Martinez? You know, my goodness, he was clearly this weekend's biggest star for me. You know, he had two home runs and a bases loaded double on Sunday that ignited that 7-run fifth inning. I mean, I sat there. I'm like, well, where is JD come from? He was really my guy that I really honed in this week, and he was great. And Scherzer's recovery, you know, he recovered pretty nicely from that terrible outing last week against the Royals. He said he was more aggressive this time on the mound. He said he took more chances. He felt as though his last outing against Kansas City, he was a little too cautious. He didn't really try to throw any hot stuff, you know, right over the plate. This time, he just let it all hang out and just said, "Hey, I'm about to go out there and be more aggressive." And I thought he was, and it proved to be a great outing for him.
Yeah, he absolutely should be aggressive. He won the Cy Young last year.
Exactly.
He clearly has the stuff to make hitters look foolish. I'm glad he was, you know, pedal to the metal yesterday, and Verlander coming back after two terrible outings with a strong one, you know.
I think that's huge for those two.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And when you have that kind of two-headed monster as far as your ace is concerned, and I know Verlander's kind of taking a step back, but if you have, you know, those two guys at the top of the rotation, and then you get guys like Sanchez and Smiley, you know, backing them up, it's tough to beat. It's tough to pick a game if you're an opposing team that you can say, yeah, we're definitely going to win that one. When all the pitchers are working and they're all dealing, I mean, that's the reason the Tigers are the World Series favorites.
Right.
Now,
that is so true.
I have two questions for you guys.
Yeah.
And one for Al. Al, the bullpen, still looking suspect, but they were good over the last 3 days. Is that true?
Yeah, they were solid. Solid.
So you're still at a 9.0 on the scale, panic-wise?
Yeah.
So it went down 0.3.
It went down 0.3. Yes, it went down a smidget.
0.1 per game? Is that how it works?
Yeah. I don't want to take it all the way. I don't want to take it down to an 8 or a 7 or even a 6. 6 would be too low as well.
But it's June.
Yeah, because still, I mean, they swept Cleveland. It went to a 4 or 5 game win streak here. I'm not ready to just take it off 9 just yet. I got maybe the next two series. maybe this these series coming up for them, if they come out and win these two or three series, then I would definitely take it down. But right now, I don't want to shoot the gun too early,
okay.
I guess you could
okay.
say.
Now, okay. My second question is, with the concerns that we've seen, the three of us, with the Tiger team so far, the MLB trade deadline is coming up. The All-Star break is coming up. There's been talks of Tigers trading for more relievers, giving more people a shot. I mean, we saw what happened with Hanrahan. That was a test, and we've seen what happened with several relievers so far. Do the Tigers, one, make an acquisition for another reliever, or do they make any move come trade deadline? Al?
That's a good question. I tell you what, you know, it seems as though the Tigers have sort of become a circus show when it comes to relief pitching and bringing in new guys and trying new things, and it's almost a sign of desperation from them. And, you know, I definitely see where they're coming from. Maybe, look, you know, don't even get me started on the whole, Valverde fiasco that ensued last year. I mean, that was just like, come on, really? They got really desperate.
You know, and he's probably not doing anything.
He's probably... If they bring Valverde back,
they could probably make a run at it.
That'd be another rant.
He's probably sitting on his couch just waiting for Dombrowski to call. Right. You know, he's got his bag packed. He's ready.
Right, right. I just think, man, at some point, you just got to trust what you got, if you will, you know, and just let it ride out and see what your personnel has as the season moves forward. And I think I'm at that point now. If the Tigers were to make another move for another relief pitcher or two, I would just kind of shake my head and say, all right, here we go again. Here's another litmus test here. You know, I just think at this point, you got to trust your guys. I don't know. Even though they've been so inconsistent. And at this point, as far as the bullpen goes, my needle is up to like a 9.8. Okay, don't get me started on that. But still, I just think at some point you got to trust them.
So, Al, how many panic meters do you have for the Tigers?
They're
just
loaded.
Each position group?
I could go player by player, baby. Player by player.
That's a whole dashboard of meters that you got to be reading.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of nines.
It's a lot.
And
yeah, I have
eights
a notebook.
9.8s and oh boy.
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
Oh boy. Well, for me, I think if you are as close to winning the World Series as the Tigers have been, you know, let's see, they go to the World Series 2 years ago, they lose in the ALCS last year. Mm-hmm. And you clearly have an area that is your Achilles heel,
right?
And that's the bullpen. I think you do anything and everything to solidify that and make another run. I mean, when you're this close, you have to do anything and everything you can to win the World Series. So I think you just go for broke. I mean, Mike Ilitch isn't getting any younger. He wants to win a World Series before he dies. So I think you do whatever you can. You throw out the money. You overpay for somebody. You do anything you can to solidify the bullpen.
So you do think they should make a move?
I think they'll probably do something. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll be a huge move, but I think they'll tinker.
With the bullpen, specifically.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and if that was the Achilles heel last year, if that's what cost them last year, you could argue it makes sense. And one other thing to add, which I think is important, look at all the past trades they made. There's always a thought of, do the Tigers have anyone else left to trade? What happens to all these prospects? They're all going to be great. Looking at all the prospects the Tigers have traded, from Cameron Maybin to all the pitching, none of them have worked out so far. It seems that the prospects coming up in the Tiger system have sometimes been a little overhyped. It seems that they're holding on to the prospects that matter with Castellanos and Suarez. It seems that they're doing good when it comes to trading. So, for me, every trade has paid off so far. I mean, look at what they just did with Kinsler and Fielder. So, if it's working... If it's working, don't stop.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it, huh? All right. Well, we got a caller right now, guys. Mike from Saginaw wants to talk about the World Cup fever. How you doing, Mike? Welcome to Current Sports.
Thank you very much, Al Martin. Thank you. What I was going to ask you, too, about the World Cup, when I hear you talking about it, our problem is we two generations behind the rest of the world when it comes to the soccer, because our national coach, I think we are a celebrity, personality-driven culture now. I mean, if it was like the other sports we have, we familiar with the coaches and how you know, we can stand off of fire and admire what they're doing. But in soccer, you know, we just like two generations, you know, behind the world on that. You know, we don't even have an American coach that is not on that pedestal, you know, like Tom Izzo. I'm just throwing his name out.
Mm-hmm.
Or John Beilein or somebody, some celeb, you know, some coach that got a name. And what you think?
So you're talking about, Mike, just the overall presence of the game in America and how we're still searching for that when it comes to soccer?
Yeah.
Right. I agree. I mean, you know, this, you know, thanks for the call, Mike. I definitely agree with you on that one because for me, I don't know if, about you guys, you know, but looking at the past years, I don't know, and maybe it's because, you know, maybe my memory's foggy because it was 4 years ago, but looking at the last World Cup and the World Cups of previous years, I don't know if I've ever felt the type of energy and interest of this, when it comes to this year's World Cup compared to years past. I don't know. Because I feel as though it's through the roof right now. I mean, every bar you go to, I got some friends I grew up with in Detroit that don't even know what soccer is. They're texting me saying, "Hey, man, I'm checking out the game right now. It's crazy." My dad's shooting me text messages about it. I'm getting tweets right now about it. I mean, I have never felt, personally for me, I'm only speaking from my perspective, I've never felt the World Cup fiasco of American soccer the way I felt it this year. I think partly it's due to this team being pretty decent this year's USA World Cup team. I don't know. What about you, man?
I think they've definitely taken steps over the last couple World Cups. I mean, you look at how they did in 2006. That was really kind of the genesis of it, the revival, I guess you could say, of American soccer. And then 2010, they kind of take a step back. But they were in every match, and every match was thrilling. Mm-hmm. And then this year, people were pumped up for it. The other thing that you left out is that it's actually on this side of the world. So there aren't odd start times where you have to wake up at, you know, everybody remembers the Olympics when the American hockey team would play at 7 a.m. And, like, you know, not everybody's going to want to do that.
Yep, I'm still dreaming about Rihanna during that time, okay? I'm not up to watch that.
Exactly. You're still in La La Land with Rihanna when people are playing soccer halfway across the world.
Right.
This time they're in Brazil. You know, we've got nice noon, you know, 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock start times. People can tune in and actually be a part of it. And, you know, plus the whole Twitter explosion, social media.
Right.
I think the global game, which soccer was, you know, it's really hitting home in America now. People can watch the Premier League anytime they want. People keep up with high-level soccer. And when you get to the World Cup, it's such a huge event. America's actually showing that they're pretty darn good.
Yeah.
I mean, people are jumping on the bandwagon. I mean, myself included. I was glued to the screen yesterday.
I couldn't get away from my TV yesterday. It was riveting stuff. And you know what's so interesting, too, looking at yesterday's match? You know, Kevin Gill had tweeted this, my former coworker at Channel 6. He said that the United States men's national soccer team just drew with the fourth-ranked team in the world, and we're disappointed. Something very special is happening with soccer in our country. And I think that was a fitting tweet. I mean, you draw with a team like Portugal against one of the greatest soccer players to ever play the game in Cristiano Ronaldo. We should be pretty happy here in America when you kind of look at it. Now, I know we're pretty sad.
That's one perspective.
But still, that says a lot, though, about where this program
lead
is.
Till about 30 seconds left. I'm still pretty ticked about it. But you're right. I mean, things are happening here. And, you know, the other big thing is, you know, Mike spoke about the kind of two-generation gap. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it if America was kind of like the rest of the world where soccer is king.
Right.
And you have guys from the NBA, guys from the NFL who grew up playing soccer and kept playing soccer when they got older.
Exactly.
I mean, can you imagine some of the stars who are in the professional leagues now playing soccer in the World Cup? I mean, you know, the sports science or whatever on Calvin Johnson where he has the catch radius of a two-car garage.
Right.
You put that in goal, nobody's scoring.
Nobody,
So it's
true.
You know, and soccer's definitely picking up steam. You see the inflection of German talent from all the servicemen who are over in Germany.
Yeah.
They had kids. Now they're on the American national team making contributions. I mean, John Brooks Jr., One of five. I mean, the global reach of soccer is definitely invading the U.S. more and more as we get along. I think it's only a matter of time before they really make some noise. Maybe Thursday they surprise us and advance to the knockout stage, and then hey, it's anybody's ball game.
I know, right? Exactly. You know, I think I will say, I think maybe in 20, maybe 30 years, when we're old and gray, Matt. Possibly this. Well, we won't be. Let's see. We'll be. Never mind. We won't be old and gray. But we'll be old.
We'll be graying.
We'll be graying, yes. Yeah. Rogaine.
Salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper, right, exactly. I think, you know, in 20, 30 years possibly, this sport has the potential to become a hallmark in this country, I think. I definitely think so. Possibly even greater than baseball, greater than hockey. It has the potential.
It helps that these matches have been absolute nail biters.
Right.
And
they've been
so
great.
Entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Really briefly, guys, before the show ends, normally we would do Pick 'em Monday. I want to switch things up here because I think this is more interesting. I want to get your guys' thoughts. Looking at everything that took place in the world of sports this weekend, I want to get your winners of the weekend or winner of the weekend. Mine, I got to go with my homegirl, Michelle Wee. She was great this weekend. She was great throughout her four rounds in the U.S. Women's Open. You know, she knocked in a par to outlast the number one woman's golfer in the world, Stacey Lewis. It's her first major. It's about time. And it's fitting because we talked about Lucy Lee yesterday. Well, not yesterday. Last week, excuse me. And how Lucy, you know, she's an 11-year-old and on the U.S. Open Tour. All of the attention was on her. If you remember, Michelle Wee was the first Lucy Lee. You know, when Michelle was, you know, a teenager, she's, what, 24 now. When Michelle was a teenager, everybody was raving about this kid. Where did she come from? And she was a great player. But now she finally has her first major. Congrats to Michelle Wee. She's my winner for the weekend. Matt?
See, that's a good one. And for the people who are sipping the Lucy Lee Kool-Aid, pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, come
on. Because Michelle Wee broke onto the scene 10 years ago. It took her a decade.
Is that long?
She was 14.
She was 14 years old.
And I'm not saying it'll take Lucy Lee 10 years to break through and win a major.
Yeah.
I am saying it's not going to happen overnight. It takes time to win a tournament like that. So pump the brakes a little bit on Lucy Lee.
Slow it down.
Fun to watch. I wouldn't put money down on her winning any major soon.
Simmer down, folks. I feel you.
In terms of my winner, I think it's got to be the U.S. national team. Mm-hmm. Even with the draw.
Even with the tie.
Captivated America.
Right. They have.
Captivated America.
Each game, they keep doing it.
I don't know what we're going to do Thursday with those games going on during the show.
Oh, they're doing current sports? Oh, man.
Both of them are
taking a day off. No, I'm joking.
It's going to be a disjointed show on Thursday. We're both going to be just glued to the computer
screen.
But I'm excited. I think the entire country is excited for Thursday. So two thumbs up to American soccer.
All right, Alex, winner of the weekend.
Yeah, mine, I got one honorable mention. My first is this guy, Kevin Streelman. I mean,
seven birdies?
Seven straight birdies, Al.
Yeah.
And the back nine, that's got to be one of the most intense focuses I've ever seen from an athlete.
I mean, you're not lying, man.
Do you know how hard it is on that kind of a course to hit seven straight birdies to win?
I know how hard it is to do it on an average course.
He takes the lead for the first time in the whole entire weekend.
Right.
That's unbelievable.
You saw me on Saturday. It's hard to do it on a regular course.
We have some comments some comments to make about that.
Yeah, it was a fun time.
Al, do you have anything you want to say?
Hey, I had a solid game up until we let that guy and his son play through.
Oh.
It took my focus away, and then things went down the drain from
there.
For
me, it's the hot dog at the turn. I get to the turn, I have a hot dog, and then my game just goes right in the can.
Guys playing through, it threw off my intense laser focus.
We know how much you hate excuses in sports, and that's got to be
one. You might as well tie now. You might as well tie.
You're right.
Oh, God.
You're right, guys. Okay, all right. Any more, Alex? You got two more?
An honorable mention to Mark D'Antonio in Michigan State. I mean, their seventh recruit. I don't think they had nearly as many this time last year.
Right.
And not just that, but they're garnering a lot more interest nationally now.
Justice Alexander, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's speaking a lot on what the program has came from back from 2 years ago to now.
So. I agree. Hats off to the MSU program again. MSU gets commitment from Justice Alexander, a verbal commit over the weekend. How about that? All right, folks. Well, we are unfortunately are out of time. It's been time flies when you're having fun on this show. Well, again, thank you to Brooks Lambeer, our soccer expert. He is a MSU men's and women's soccer reporter for Impact Sports. He also covers Lansing United. He'll be back with us Friday. We'll have Bob Every later on this week. Hopefully get Mateen on tomorrow. Charlie Bell is going to join us. Rico Beard. We'll talk a little recruiting. We have a stat week in store for you, so tune in each and every day. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, WKRE's Lansing. As always, take care. Have a great start to your week, and be easy, people.